英語聞き流しリスニング、英語テキストと MP3 音声ダウンロードはホームページからご利用いただけます。88thpp.com 88thpp.com
He believed in the future, Patrasky, of more experience and of more philosophy, thought that the loss of the mill supper in the present was ill compensated by dreams of milk and honey and some vague hereafter. And Patrasky growled whenever he passed by Boz Koges. This is Alois's name day, is it not? Said the old man Doss that night from the corner where he was stretched upon his bed of sacking. The boy gave a gesture of assent, he wished that the old man's memory had erred a little, instead of keeping such sure account. And why not there? His grandfather pursued. Thou hast never missed a year before, Nello. Thou art too sick to leave, murmured the lad, bending his handsome head over the bed. Tut. Tut. Mother Newlett would have come and sat with me, as she does scores of times. What is the cause, Nello? The old man persisted. Thou surely hast not had ill words with the little one? Nay, grandfather, never, said the boy quickly, with a hot color in his bent face. Simply and truly, Boz Koges did not have me asked this year. He has taken some whim against me. But thou hast done nothing wrong? That I know, nothing. I took the portrait of Alois on a piece of pine, that is all. Ah. The old man was silent, the truth suggested itself to him with the boy's innocent answer. He was tied to a bed of dried leaves in the corner of a wattle hut, but he had not wholly forgotten what the ways of the world were like. He drew Nello's fair head fondly to his breast with a tenderer gesture. Thou art very poor, my child, he said with a quiver the more in his aged, trembling voice, so poor. It is very hard for thee. Nay, I am rich, murmured Nello, and in his innocence he thought so, rich with the imperishable powers that are mightier than the might of kings. And he went and stood by the door of the hut in the quiet autumn night, and watched the stars troop by and the tall poplars bend and shiver in the wind. All the casements of the mill house were lighted, and every now and then the notes of the flute came to him. The tears fell down his cheeks, for he was but a child, yet he smiled, for he said to himself, in the future. He stayed there until all was quite still and dark, then he and Patrasky went within and slept together, long and deeply, side by side. Now he had a secret which only Patrasky knew. There was a little outhouse to the hut, which no one entered but himself, a dreary place, but with abundant clear light from the north. Here he had fashioned himself rudely an easel in rough lumber, and here on a great grey sea of stretched paper he had given shape to one of the innumerable fancies which possessed his brain. No one had ever taught him anything, colours he had no means to buy, he had gone without bread many a time to procure even the few rude vehicles that he had here, and it was only in black or white that he could fashion the things he saw. This great figure which he had drawn here in chalk was only an old man sitting on a fallen tree, only that. He had seen old Michel the woodman sitting so at evening many a time. He had never had a soul to tell him of outline or perspective, of anatomy or of shadow, and yet he had given all the weary, worn-out age, all the sad, quiet patience, all the rugged, careworn pathos of his original, and given them so that the old lonely figure was a poem, sitting there, meditative and alone, on the dead tree, with the darkness of the descending night behind him. It was rude, of course, in a way, and had many faults, no doubt, and yet it was real, true in nature, true in art, and very mournful, and in a manner beautiful. Patrasky had lain quiet countless hours watching its gradual creation after the labor of each day was done, and he knew that Nello had a hope, vain and wild perhaps, but strongly cherished, of sending this great drawing to compete for a prize of 200 francs a year which it was announced in Antwerp would be open to every lad of talent, scholar or peasant, under 18, who would attempt to win it with some unaided work of chalk or pencil. Three of the foremost artists in the town of Rubens were to be the judges and elect the victor according to his merits. All the spring and summer and autumn Nello had been at work upon this treasure, which, if triumphant, would build him his first step toward independence and the mysteries of the art which he blindly, ignorantly, and yet passionately adored. He said nothing to anyone, his grandfather would not have understood, and little Alois was lost to him. Only to Patrasky he told all, and whispered, Rubens would give it me, I think, if he knew. Patrasky thought so too, for he knew that Rubens had loved dogs or he had never painted them with such exquisite fidelity, and men who loved dogs were, as Patrasky knew, always pitiful. The drawings were to go in on the first day of December, and the decision be given on the 24th, so that he who should win might rejoice with all his people at the Christmas season. In the twilight of a bitter wintry day, and with a beating heart, now quick with hope, now faint with fear, Nello placed the great picture on his little green milk cart, and took it, with the help of Patrasky, into the town, and there left it, as enjoined, at the doors of a public building. Perhaps it is worth nothing at all. How could I tell? He thought, with the heart sickness of a great timidity. Now that he had left it there, it seemed to him so hazardous, so vain, so foolish, to dream that he, a little lad with bare feet, who barely knew his letters, could do anything at which great painters, real artists, could ever deign to look. Yet he took heart as he went by the cathedral. The lordly form of Rubens seemed to rise from the fog and the darkness, and to loom in its magnificence before him, whilst the lips, with their kindly smile, seemed to him to murmur, "Nay, have courage." It was not by a weak heart and by faint fears that I wrote my name for all time upon Antwerp. Nello ran home through the cold night, comforted. He had done his best, the rest must be as God willed, he thought, in that innocent, unquestioning faith which had been taught him in the little grey chapel among the willows and the poplar trees. The winter was very sharp already. That night, after they reached the hut, snow fell, and fell for very many days after that, so that the paths and the divisions in the fields were all obliterated, and all the smaller streams were frozen over, and the cold was intense upon the plains. Then, indeed, it became hard work to go round for the milk while the world was all dark, and carry it through the darkness to the silent town. Hard work, especially for Patrisky, for the passage of the years, that were only bringing Nello a stronger youth, were bringing him old age, and his joints were stiff and his bones ached often. But he would never give up his share of the labor. Nello would fain have spared him and drawn the cart himself, but Patrisky would not allow it. All he would ever permit or accept was the help of a thrust from behind to the truck as it lumbered along through the ice ruts. Patrisky had lived in harness, and he was proud of it. He suffered a great deal sometimes from frost, and the terrible roads, and the rheumatic pains of his limbs, but he only drew his breath hard and bent his stout neck, and trod onward with steady patience. "Rest thee at home, Patrisky, it is time thou didst rest, and I can quite well push in the cart by myself," urged Nello many a morning, but Patrisky, who understood him aright, would no more have consented to stay at home than a veteran soldier to shirk when the charge was sounding, and every day he would rise and place himself in his shafts, and plod along over the snow through the fields that his four round feet had left their print upon so many, many years. "One must never rest till one dies," thought Patrisky, and sometimes it seemed to him that the time of rest for him was not very far off. His sight was less clear than it had been, and it gave him pain to rise after the night's sleep, though he would never lie a moment in his straw when once the bell of the chapel tolling five let him know that the daybreak of labor had begun. "My poor Patrisky, we shall soon lie quiet together, you and I," said old Jehan Doss, stretching out to stroke the head of Patrisky with the old withered hand which had always shared with him its one poor crust of bread, and the hearts of the old man and the old dog ached together with one thought, when they were gone, who would care for their darling? One afternoon, as they came back from Antwerp over the snow, which had become hard and smooth as marble over all the Flemish plains, they found dropped in the road a pretty little puppet, a tambourine player, all scarlet and gold, about 6 inches high, and, unlike greater personages when fortune lets them drop, quite unspoiled and unhurt by its fall. It was a pretty toy. Nello tried to find its owner, and, failing, thought that it was just the thing to please Alois. It was quite night when he passed the mill house, he knew the little window of her room. It could be no harm, he thought, if he gave her his little piece of treasure trove, they had been playfellows so long. There was a shed with a sloping roof beneath her casement, he climbed it and tapped softly at the lattice, there was a little light within. The child opened it and looked out half frightened. Nello put the tambourine player into her hands. "Here is a doll I found in the snow, Alois. Take it," he whispered, "take it, and God bless thee, dear." He slid down from the shed roof before she had time to thank him, and ran off through the darkness. That night there was a fire at the mill. Outbuildings and much corn were destroyed, although the mill itself and the dwelling house were unharmed. All the village was out in terror, and engines came tearing through the snow from Antwerp. The miller was insured, and would lose nothing, nevertheless, he was in furious wrath, and declared aloud that the fire was due to no accident, but to some foul intent. Nello, awakened from his sleep, ran to help with the rest, Bas Coges thrust him angrily aside. "Thou wert loitering here after dark," he said roughly. "I believe, on my soul, that thou dost know more of the fire than any one." Nello heard him in silence, stupefied, not supposing that any one could say such things except in jest, and not comprehending how any one could pass a jest at such a time. Nevertheless, the miller said the brutal thing openly to many of his neighbors in the day that followed, and though no serious charge was ever preferred against the lad, it got bruited about that Nello had been seen in the mill yard after dark on some unspoken errand, and that he bore Bas Coges a grudge for forbidding his intercourse with little Alois, and so the hamlet, which followed the sayings of its richest landowner Servilii, and whose families all hoped to secure the riches of Alois in some future time for their sons, took the hint to give grave looks and cold words to old Jehan Das's grandson. No one said anything to him openly, but all the village agreed together to humor the miller's prejudice, and at the cottages and farms where Nello and Patriski called every morning for the milk for Antwerp, downcast glances and brief phrases replaced to them the broad smiles and cheerful greetings to which they had been always used. No one really credited the miller's absurd suspicion, nor the outrageous accusations born of them, but the people were all very poor and very ignorant, and the one rich man of the place had pronounced against him. Nello, in his innocence and his friendlessness, had no strength to stem the popular tide. "Thou art very cruel to the lad," the miller's wife dared to say, weeping, to her lord. "Sure he is an innocent lad and a faithful, and would never dream of any such wickedness, however sore his heart might be." But Bas Koges, being an obstinate man, having once said a thing, held to it doggedly, though in his innermost soul he knew well the injustice that he was committing. Meanwhile, Nello endured the injury done against him with a certain proud patience that disdained to complain. He only gave way a little when he was quite alone with old Patriski. "Besides," he thought, "if it should win, they will be sorry then, perhaps." Still, to a boy not quite 16, and who had dwelt in one little world all his short life, and in his childhood had been caressed and applauded on all sides, it was a hard trial to have the whole of that little world turn against him for naught. Especially hard in that bleak, snowbound, famine-stricken wintertime, when the only light and warmth there could be found abode beside the village hearths and in the kindly greetings of neighbors. In the wintertime all drew nearer to each other, all to all, except to Nello and Patriski, with whom none now would have anything to do, and who were left to fare as they might with the old paralyzed, bedridden man in the little cabin, whose fire was often low, and whose board was often without bread, for there was a buyer from Antwerp who had taken to drive his mule in of a day for the milk of the various dairies, and there were only three or four of the people who had refused his terms of purchase and remained faithful to the little green cart. So that the burden which Patriski drew had become very light, and the centime pieces in Nello's pouch had become, alas, very small likewise. The dog would stop, as usual, at all the familiar gates, which were now closed to him, and look up at them with wistful, mute appeal, and it cost the neighbors a pang to shut their doors and their hearts, and let Patriski draw his cart on again, empty. Nevertheless, they did it, for they desired to please Bas Koges. Noel was close at hand. The weather was very wild and cold. The snow was 6 feet deep, and the ice was firm enough to bear oxen and men upon it everywhere. At this season the little village was always gay and cheerful. At the poorest dwelling there were possets and cakes, joking and dancing, sugared saints and gilded jesu. The merry Flemish bells jingled everywhere on the horses, everywhere within doors some well-filled soup pots sang and smoked over the stove, and everywhere over the snow without laughing maidens pattered in bright kerchiefs and stout kirtles, going to and from the mass. Only in the little hut it was very dark and very cold. Nello and Patriski were left utterly alone, for one night in the week before the Christmas day, death entered there, and took away from life forever old Jehan Das, who had never known life aught save its poverty and its pains. He had long been half-dead, incapable of any movement except a feeble gesture, and powerless for anything beyond a gentle word, and yet his loss fell on them both with a great horror in it. They mourned him passionately. He had passed away from them in his sleep, and when in the grey dawn they learned their bereavement, unutterable solitude and desolation seemed to close around them. He had long been only a poor, feeble, paralyzed old man, who could not raise a hand in their defense, but he had loved them well, his smile had always welcomed their return. They mourned for him unceasingly, refusing to be comforted, as in the white winter day they followed the deal shell that held his body to the nameless grave by the little grey church. They were his only mourners, these two whom he had left friendless upon earth, the young boy and the old dog. "Surely, he will relent now and let the poor lad come hither?" thought the miller's wife, glancing at her husband smoking by the hearth. Bas Koges knew her thought, but he hardened his heart, and would not unbar his door as the little, humble funeral went by. "The boy is a beggar," he said to himself, "he shall not be about Alois." The woman dared not say anything aloud, but when the grave was closed and the mourners had gone, she put a wreath of immortelles into Alois's hands and bade her go and lay it reverently on the dark, unmarked mound where the snow was displaced. Nello and Patriski went home with broken hearts. But even of that poor, melancholy, cheerless home they were denied the consolation. There was a month's rent overdue for their little home, and when Nello had paid the last sad service to the dead he had not a coin left. He went and begged grace of the owner of the hut, a cobbler who went every Sunday night to drink his pint of wine and smoke with Bas Koges. The cobbler would grant no mercy. He was a harsh, miserly man, and loved money. He claimed in default of his rent every stick and stone, every pot and pan, in the hut, and bade Nello and Patrisky be out of it on the morrow. Now, the cabin was lowly enough, and in some sense miserable enough, and yet their hearts clove to it with a great affection. They had been so happy there, and in the summer, with its clambering vine and its flowering beans, it was so pretty and bright in the midst of the sunlighted fields. Their life in it had been full of labor and privation, and yet they had been so well content, so gay of heart, running together to meet the old man's never-failing smile of welcome. All night long the boy and the dog sat by the fireless hearth in the darkness, drawn close together for warmth and sorrow. Their bodies were insensible to the cold, but their hearts seemed frozen in them. When the morning broke over the white, chill earth, it was the morning of Christmas Eve. With a shudder, Nello clasped close to him his only friend, while his tears fell hot and fast on the dog's frank forehead. "Let us go, Patrisky, dear, dear Patrisky," he murmured. "We will not wait to be kicked out, let us go." Patrisky had no will but his, and they went sadly, side by side, out from the little place which was so dear to them both, and in which every humble, homely thing was to them precious and beloved. Patrisky drooped his head wearily as he passed by his own green cart. It was no longer his, it had to go with the rest to pay the rent, and his brass harness lay idle and glittering on the snow. The dog could have lain down beside it and died for very heart sickness as he went, but whilst the lad lived and needed him, Patrisky would not yield and give way. They took the old accustomed road into Antwerp. The day had yet scarce more than dawned, most of the shutters were still closed, but some of the villagers were about. They took no notice whilst the dog and the boy passed by them. At one door Nello paused and looked wistfully within. His grandfather had done many a kindly turn in neighbor's service to the people who dwelt there. "Would you give Patrisky a crust?" he said, timidly. "He is old, and he has had nothing since last forenoon." The woman shut the door hastily, murmuring some vague saying about wheat and rye being very dear that season. The boy and the dog went on again wearily, they asked no more. By slow and painful ways they reached Antwerp as the chimes told 10. "If I had anything about me I could sell to get him bread," thought Nello, but he had nothing except the wisp of linen and serge that covered him, and his pair of wooden shoes. Patrisky understood, and nestled his nose into the lad's hand, as though to pray him not to be disquieted for any woe or want of his. The winner of the drawing prize was to be proclaimed at noon, and to the public building where he had left his treasure Nello made his way. On the steps and in the entrance hall there was a crowd of youths, some of his age, some older, all with parents or relatives or friends. His heart was sick with fear as he went among them, holding Patrisky close to him. The great bells of the city clashed out the hour of noon with brazen clamor. The doors of the inner hall were opened. The eager, panting throng rushed in. It was known that the selected picture would be raised above the rest upon a wooden dais. A mist obscured Nello's sight, his head swam, his limbs almost failed him. When his vision cleared, he saw the drawing raised on high. It was not his own. A slow, sonorous voice was proclaiming aloud that victory had been adjudged to Stephen Kieslinger, born in the burg of Antwerp, son of a warfinger in that town. When Nello recovered his consciousness he was lying on the stones without, and Patrisky was trying with every art he knew to call him back to life. In the distance a throng of the youths of Antwerp were shouting around their successful comrade, and escorting him with acclamations to his home upon the quay. The boy staggered to his feet and drew the dog into his embrace. "It is all over, dear Patrisky," he murmured, "all over." He rallied himself as best he could, for he was weak from fasting, and retraced his steps to the village. Patrisky paced by his side with his head drooping and his old limbs feeble from hunger and sorrow. The snow was falling fast, a keen hurricane blew from the north, it was bitter as death on the plains. It took them long to traverse the familiar path, and the bells were sounding 4 of the clock as they approached the hamlet. Suddenly Patrisky paused, arrested by a scent in the snow, scratched, whined, and drew out with his teeth a small case of brown leather. He held it up to Nello in the darkness. Where they were there stood a little Calvary, and a lamp burned dully under the cross. The boy mechanically turned the case to the light, on it was the name of Boz Coges, and within it were notes for 2,000 francs. The sight roused the lad a little from his stupor. He thrust it in his shirt, and stroked Patrisky and drew him onward. The dog looked up wistfully in his face. Nello made straight for the mill house, and went to the house door and struck on its panels. The miller's wife opened it weeping, with little Eloise clinging close to her skirts. "Is it thee, thou poor lad?" she said kindly through her tears. "Get thee gone ere the boss see thee. We are in sore trouble tonight. He is out seeking for a power of money that he has let fall riding homeward, and in this snow he never will find it, and God knows it will go nigh to ruin us. It is heaven's own judgment for the things we have done to thee." Nella put the note case in her hand and called Patrisky within the house. Patrisky found the money tonight, he said quickly. Tell Boz Kojas so, I think he will not deny the dog shelter and food in his old age. Keep him from pursuing me, and I pray of you to be good to him. Ere either woman or dog knew what he meant, he had stooped and kissed Patrisky, then closed the door hurriedly and disappeared in the gloom of the fast, falling night. The woman and the child stood speechless with joy and fear. Patrisky vainly spent the fury of his anguish against the iron-bound oak of the barred house door. They did not dare unbar the door and let him forth, they tried all they could to solace him. They brought him sweet cakes and juicy meats, they tempted him with the best they had, they tried to lure him to abide by the warmth of the hearth, but it was of no avail. Patrisky refused to be comforted or to stir from the barred portal. It was 6 o'clock when from an opposite entrance the miller at last came, jaded and broken, into his wife's presence. It is lost forever, he said, with an ashen cheek and a quiver in his stern voice. We have looked with lanterns everywhere, it is gone, the little maiden's portion and all. His wife put the money into his hand, and told him how it had come to her. The strong man sank trembling into a seat and covered his face, ashamed and almost afraid. I have been cruel to the lad, he muttered at length, I deserved not to have good at his hands. Little Alois, taking courage, crept close to her father and nestled against him her fair curly head. Nella may come here again, father? She whispered. He may come tomorrow as he used to do. The miller pressed her in his arms, his hard, sunburned face was very pale and his mouth trembled. Surely, surely, he answered his child. He shall bide here on Christmas Day, and any other day he will. God helping me, I will make amends to the boy, I will make amends. Little Alois kissed him in gratitude and joy, then slid from his knees and ran to where the dog kept watch by the door. And tonight I may feast Patrisky? She cried in a child's thoughtless glee. Her father bent his head gravely, let the dog have the best, for the stern old man was moved and shaken to his heart's depths. It was Christmas Eve, and the mill house was filled with oak logs and squares of turf, with cream and honey, with meat and bread, and the rafters were hung with wreaths of evergreen, and the Calvary and the cuckoo clock looked out from a mass of holly. There were little paper lanterns, too, for Alois, and toys of various fashions and sweetmeats in bright pictured papers. There were light and warmth and abundance everywhere, and the child would fain have made the dog a guest honored and feasted. But Patrisky would neither lie in the warmth nor share in the cheer. Famished he was and very cold, but without Nello he would partake neither of comfort nor food. Against all temptation he was proof, and close against the door he leaned always, watching only for a means of escape. He wants the lad, said Boz Kojas. Good dog. Good dog. I will go over to the lad the first thing at day dawn. For no one but Patrisky knew that Nello had left the hut, and no one but Patrisky divined that Nello had gone to face starvation and misery alone. The mill kitchen was very warm, great logs crackled and flamed on the hearth, neighbors came in for a glass of wine and a slice of the fat goose baking for supper. Alois, gleeful and sure of her playmate back on the morrow, bounded and sang and tossed back her yellow hair. Boz Kojas, in the fullness of his heart, smiled on her through moistened eyes, and spoke of the way in which he would befriend her favorite companion. The housemother sat with calm, contented face at the spinning wheel, the cuckoo and the clock chirped mirthful hours. Amidst it all Patrisky was bidden with a thousand words of welcome to tarry there a cherished guest. But neither peace nor plenty could allure him where Nella was not. When the supper smoked on the board, and the voices were loudest and gladdest, and the Christ child brought choicest gifts to Alois, Patrisky, watching always an occasion, glided out when the door was unlatched by a careless newcomer, and as swiftly as his weak and tired limbs would bear him sped over the snow and the bitter, black night. He had only one thought, to follow Nello. A human friend might have paused for the pleasant meal, the cheery warmth, the cozy slumber, but that was not the friendship of Patrisky. He remembered a bygone time, when an old man and a little child had found him sick unto death in the wayside ditch. Snow had fallen freshly all the evening long, it was now nearly 10, the trail of the boy's footsteps was almost obliterated. It took Patrisky long to discover any scent. When at last he found it, it was lost again quickly, and lost and recovered, and again lost and again recovered, 100 times or more. The night was very wild. The lamps under the wayside crosses were blown out, the roads were sheets of ice, the impenetrable darkness hid every trace of habitations, there was no living thing abroad. All the cattle were housed, and in all the huts and homesteads men and women rejoiced and feasted. There was only Patrisky out in the cruel cold, old and famished and full of pain, but with the strength and the patience of a great love to sustain him in his search. The trail of Nella's steps, faint and obscure as it was under the new snow, went straightly along the accustomed tracks into Antwerp. It was past midnight when Patrasky traced it over the boundaries of the town and into the narrow, tortuous, gloomy streets. It was all quite dark in the town, save where some light gleamed ruddily through the crevices of house shutters, or some group went homeward with lanterns chanting drinking songs. The streets were all white with ice, the high walls and roofs loomed black against them. There was scarce a sound save the riot of the winds down the passages as they tossed the creaking signs and shook the tall lamp irons. So many passers-by had trodden through and through the snow, so many diverse paths had crossed and recrossed each other, that the dog had a hard task to retain any hold on the track he followed. But he kept on his way, though the cold pierced him to the bone, and the jagged ice cut his feet, and the hunger in his body gnawed like a rat's teeth. He kept on his way, a poor gaunt, shivering thing, and by long patience traced the steps he loved into the very heart of the burg and up to the steps of the great cathedral. "He is gone to the things that he loved," thought Patrasky. He could not understand, but he was full of sorrow and of pity for the art passion that to him was so incomprehensible and yet so sacred. The portals of the cathedral were unclosed after the midnight mass. Some heedlessness in the custodians, too eager to go home and feast or sleep, or too drowsy to know whether they turned the keys aright, had left one of the doors unlocked. By that accident the footfalls Patrasky sought had passed through into the building, leaving the white marks of snow upon the dark stone floor. By that slender white thread, frozen as it fell, he was guided through the intense silence, through the immensity of the vaulted space, guided straight to the gates of the chancel, and, stretched there upon the stones, he found Nello. He crept up and touched the face of the boy. "Didst thou dream that I should be faithless and forsake thee?"
"I, a dog?"
said that mute caress. The lad raised himself with a low cry and clasped him close. "Let us lie down and die together," he murmured. "Men have no need of us, and we are all alone." In answer, Patrasky crept closer yet, and laid his head upon the young boy's breast. The great tears stood in his brown, sad eyes, not for himself he was happy. They lay close together in the piercing cold. The blasts that blew over the Flemish dikes from the northern seas were like waves of ice, which froze every living thing they touched. The interior of the immense vault of stone in which they were was even more bitterly chilled than the snow-covered plains without. Now and then a bat moved in the shadows, now and then a gleam of light came on the ranks of carven figures. Under the Rubens they lay together quite still, and soothed almost into a dreaming slumber by the numbing narcotic of the cold. Together they dreamed of the old glad days when they had chased each other through the flowering grasses of the summer meadows, or sat hidden in the tall bulrushes by the water's side, watching the boats go seaward in the sun. Suddenly through the darkness a great white radiance streamed through the vastness of the isles. The moon, that was at her height, had broken through the clouds, the snow had ceased to fall, the light reflected from the snow without was clear as the light of dawn. It fell through the arches full upon the two pictures above, from which the boy on his entrance had flung back the veil. The elevation and the descent of the cross were for one instant visible. Nello rose to his feet and stretched his arms to them, the tears of a passionate ecstasy glistened on the paleness of his face. "I have seen them at last," he cried aloud. "Oh God, it is enough." His limbs failed under him, and he sank upon his knees, still gazing upward at the majesty that he adored. For a few brief moments the light illumined the divine visions that had been denied to him so long, light clear and sweet and strong as though it streamed from the throne of heaven. Then suddenly it passed away, once more a great darkness covered the face of Christ. The arms of the boy drew close again the body of the dog. "We shall see his face, there," he murmured, "and he will not part us, I think." On the morrow, by the chancel of the cathedral, the people of Antwerp found them both. They were both dead, the cold of the night had frozen into stillness alike the young life and the old. When the Christmas morning broke and the priests came to the temple, they saw them lying thus on the stones together. Above the veils were drawn back from the great visions of Rubens, and the fresh rays of the sunrise touched the thorn-crowned head of the Christ. As the day grew on there came an old, hard-featured man who wept as women weep. "I was cruel to the lad," he muttered, "and now I would have made amends, yea, to the half of my substance, and he should have been to me as a son." There came also, as the day grew apace, a painter who had fame in the world, and who was liberal of hand and of spirit. "I seek one who should have had the prize yesterday had worth won," he said to the people, "a boy of rare promise and genius." An old woodcutter on a fallen tree at eventide, that was all his theme. But there was greatness for the future in it. "I would fain find him, and take him with me and teach him art." And a little child with curling fair hair, sobbing bitterly as she clung to her father's arm, cried aloud, "Oh, Nello, come. We have all ready for thee. The Christ child's hands are full of gifts, and the old piper will play for us, and the mother says thou shalt stay by the hearth and burn nuts with us all the Noel week long, yes, even to the feast of the kings. and Patrasky will be so happy. Oh, Nello, wake and come. But the young pale face, turned upward to the light of the great Rubens with a smile upon its mouth, answered them all, "It is too late." For the sweet, sonorous bells went ringing through the frost, and the sunlight shone upon the plains of snow, and the populace trooped gay and glad through the streets, but Nello and Patrasky no more asked charity at their hands. All they needed now Antwerp gave unbidden. Death had been more pitiful to them than longer life would have been. It had taken the one in the loyalty of love, and the other in the innocence of faith, from a world which for love has no recompense and for faith no fulfillment. All their lives they had been together, and in their deaths they were not divided, for when they were found the arms of the boy were folded too closely around the dog to be severed without violence, and the people of their little village, contrite and ashamed, implored a special grace for them, and, making them one grave, laid them to rest there side by side, forever.
英語聞き流しリスニング、英語テキストと MP3 音声ダウンロードはホームページからご利用いただけます。88thpp.com 88thpp.com